Namo Bhagavate Dhammagnati Bhisaha Kalanasa Dishamme Shaparanu Konirodita Narayana Namaskrityanaram Chaivam Narottama Devim Sarasatim Vyasam Tato Jaya Mudirayat.
The Bhagavatam is as brilliant as the sun, is arisen just after the departure of Lord Krishna to his own abode, accompanied with knowledge, religion, etc. Persons who have lost their vision through the dense darkness of the age of Kali shall get light out of this Purana. Before beginning our study of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a very means of conquest, we should first offer respects to the personality of God in Narayan, to the Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, the goddess of learning, Mother Saraswati, the author, Srila Vyasadev, and my spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So we are reading text 34, correcto? And of course I don't have my reading glasses and I'm half blind, so please work with me here.
Tat sambhava kavir ato anyad.
To tell you the truth, I can't read it. Can you read?
Shamanas.
Hey. I can take over now. By the grace of Satchitananda. Now I have no excuse. I believe it's the Brahma Samhita tune.
Tat sambhava kavirato nyad apasyamanas. Tvam bijam atmani tatam sabahir vichintya. Navinda labda satam apsu nimajamano. Jaten kure katam upa uho palabeta bijam. Tat sambhava kavirato nyad apasyumanas. Tvam bijam atmani tatam sabahir vichintya. Navinda dabdashtatam apsu nimajamana. Jaten kure katamuho palabeta bijam.
One more time.
Tat sambhava kavirato nyarapasyamanas. Tvam bijam atmani tatam sabahir vachintya. Navinda rabda satam apsuni manjamano. Jaten kare katamuho palabeta bijam. Tat sambhava kavirato manas. Tam bijam atmani tatam sabahir vichintya. Navinda rabda satam apsuni manjamano. Jaten kure katamuho palabeta bijam. tat sambhavakka virato nyalapna shamanas.
For the sake of time, Vaishnavis.
Tat sambhava kavirato nyarapa shamanas. Tvam bijamatmani tatam sabahir vachintya. Navinda labda satamapsuni manjamano. Jatten kure ketamuho palabeta bijam.
No, go ahead, another jit.
Tat sambhava katirutonya napashamanos. Tvam bijamatmani tatam so bahir vachintya. Namvinda labda satamapsu nimanjamano. Jatin kure natinu veta bijam. Tat sambhava.
Who was generated from that lotus flower? Kavi. He who can understand the subtle cause of creation, Lord Brahma. Meaning that Lord Brahma can understand, not that he's the subtle cause, but he can understand the subtle cause.
Ata,
from that,
lotus.
Anyat, anything else.
Upasyamana,
not able to see.
Tvam,
your lordship.
Bijam,
the cause of the lotus.
Atmani,
in himself.
Tatam,
expanded.
Sa,
he, Lord Brahma.
Bahi,
vichintya,
considering to be external.
Na,
not.
Avindat,
understood.
You,
meaning Krishna.
Abdasat,
Satam,
for 100 years,
according to the demigods.
And Prabhupada makes a note here, one day for the demigods is 6 months, is 6 of our months, so you can just calculate 100 years how long that is. Serious effort by Lord Brahma.
Vihi,
you,
abdasatam,
oh, that we read. For 100, okay, we'll start here.
Nimajamana,
diving.
Jite ankure.
When the seed fructifies and is manifested as a creeper.
Katam.
How?
Uha.
Oh my Lord.
Upalabeta.
One who can perceive.
Bijam.
The seed that has already fructified. Translation. From that great lotus flower, Brahma was generated. But Brahma certainly could see nothing but the lotus. Therefore, thinking you to be outside, Lord Brahma dove into the water and attempted to find the source of the lotus for 100 years. He could find no trace of you, however, for when a seed fructifies, the original seed cannot be seen. Also, you say, from that great lotus, Brahma was generated. But Brahma certainly could see nothing but the lotus. Therefore, thinking you to be outside, Lord Brahma dove into the water and attempted to find the source of the lotus for 100 years. He could find no trace of you, however. For when a seed fructifies, the original seed cannot be seen. Purport. This is the description of the cause of manifestation. The development of the cosmic manifestation is like the fructification of a seed. When the cotton is transformed into thread, the cotton can no longer be visible. And when the thread is woven into cloth, the thread can no longer be visible. Similarly, it is perfectly correct that when the seed that had generated from the navel of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu became manifested as the cosmic creation, one could no longer understand where the cause of the cosmic manifestation is. Modern scientists have tried to explain the origin of the creation by a chunk theory. But no one can explain how such a chunk might have burst. The Vedic literature, however, explains clearly that the total material energy was agitated by the three modes of material nature because of the glance of the Supreme Lord. In other words, in the terms of the chunk theory, the bursting of the chunk was caused by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, one may accept the supreme cause, Lord Vishnu, as the cause of all causes. Thank you very much, Prabhu. Seeing by the mercy of the Vaishnavas. Once again. Om Agnate Maranta Seya Gyana Gyana Salakaya Chakshushan Militan Gyana Tazanir Shri Gurave Namaha. Well, I guess I'll jump ahead. We are going to talk today about perception, the means and power of perception. And we're going to read a message from the GBC, which is going to be the wind-up of the thing. But Prabhupada tells a joke. Actually, it's not a, Prabhupada was told the joke and liked it, so I'll repeat it. Materialistic man, said to God, "Hey, anything you can do, we can do. You know, you created this, we've created that. You made a flower, we made a plastic flower." Of course, a plastic flower has no fragrance and cannot self-generate. But anyway, you know, in arrogance, they were saying, "Anything you can do, we can do better. So we don't need you hanging around anymore. You just, you know, move on." So God's answer was, "Well, all right, but as a kind and concerned parent, father, I'm going to, you know, let's just test it out. So let's just see if you can do what I did." And Matthias said, "Fine, no problem, test me." So, of course, you know, it's a biblical thing. It's a Christian joke. God took some dust, formed it into a man, and breathed life into it. So the materialist said, "I can do that too." And he started, and God said, hey, wait a minute. Get your own dirt." You follow? How's he going to do that, you know? So Prabhupada would ask, where did the chunk come from? And here Prabhupada, I've forgotten this purport. Prabhupada's talking, okay, even you accept that the chunk, let's just accept, chunk is there. What caused it to explode? You know? I mean, there's so many, we believe fantastic stories. I mean, let's be frank. Right now we're talking about Lord Vishnu lying down and from his navel a lotus flower coming, it opens, and there's Lord Brahma with four heads, please note. And in other universes, many more. I mean, it's a fantastic story. Well, you religionists, you know, you just believe these fables. And when you grow up intellectually, you'll understand. You know, you'll be, it can all be reduced to simple formulas of mathematics that can be put on a t-shirt, like E equals MC squared. But when you actually go into it, they also believe fantastic stories. Now, I don't want to spend time going into it. I'll give you a few examples, but picture a pan balance. So you know a pan balance? Picture, you know, you put a weight on this side. So, whoop, Hare Krishna's fantastic stories, Bhagavatam, I mean, where do you want to start? If one was to speculate, Prabhupada said that one of the best mental speculators, and in this particular case, he didn't mean it, help me get back to the pan balance in a moment, but he didn't mean it, Prabhupada didn't mean it as a pejorative, he was talking about Socrates. And Prabhupada said that he speculated up to the point that he was not this body. I saw Prabhupada do this in India with a children's class. He was at a boys' school. Somewhere they scheduled him to speak at a boys' school. And they were all making all kinds of noise. And, you know, they're kids. They weren't. So Prabhupada immediately understood his audience, immediately took out who was the lead boy, and said, "Stand up here in front. Come in front." So the boy came in front. And Prabhupada said, "Point to your nose." You know, like Simon Says. Okay, the boy pointed at his nose. "Point to your ear." The boy pointed at his nose. "Point to your," you know, like this. And then Prabhupada said, "Point to yourself." And the boy stopped for a minute and didn't know where to point. Prabhupada said, "That is my point. That these are all components of the body and the mind, but where are you? Where is the actual self? And the kids got it. They thought, wait a minute, who am I? I'm dwelling within the city of nine gates. So the point I'm trying to make is that I want to get back to fantastic stories. So we believe fantastic stories, we'll accept it. Socrates, that was my point. Socrates speculated up to the point that he was not this body. When they gave him hemlock, they said, now we're finished with you. You know, the city elders, because he was agitating the minds of the youth. So they said, now we're finished with you. And his famous response was, so they say, well, first you have to catch me. He's in jail. He's in a cell. They're feeding him hemlock. But he said, I'm not this body. You know, you can kill them. So first you have to catch me. And also up to this point that ultimately there is an absolute truth, but it's formless. Because form means limitation in their mind. Of course, material form means limitation, correct. So that, it's simply a nati. It's an opposite. Well, form is limiting, so formless must be unlimited. So, you know, they can speculate up to that point. But, and we all, because devotees are introspective sages, think about it. Before you met the devotees, did you ever speculate up to the point that the absolute truth was a small boy? Blue, by the way, Sham, the third row of monsoon clouds when the season first starts, that's the color of Krishna. Anybody speculated that he's a small cowherd boy standing before Lord Brahma with, you know, his mother Jasoda's giving him some nice fruit and yogurt and flat rice, and he's holding it in his hand and it's dripping through his fingers. And Lord Brahma says, you appear to be not without even sufficient education. Anybody speculate up to that point that he's running in fear of Mother Yasoda, although he's the cause of fear persona? How about another? Anybody here ever speculate up to the point of Lord Nrisingadev? Huh? No way, you know? I remember when I first met the devotees, I was just walking on the street, and I got a Back to Godhead magazine, and it had Lord Nrisingadev on the cover. Now, I found out later on in the history, they painted a very pacifistic, if that's a word, of Lord Nrisingadev. They showed it to Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, where's the blood? You know, Lord Nrisingadev is very intense, you know, the garland of intestines, you know. So I remember the first Back to God magazine I got. I knew the devotees were vegetarian. I knew they, you know, ahimsa, nonviolence. I was thinking like that. And I saw the cover of Back to God, and I said, well, I guess they're nonviolent. Just don't agitate them. Just don't get them angry, because they may blow a gasket. So, I mean, no one would speculate up to that point. We believe fantastic stories. I could spend the whole, you know, Krishna lift with his left hand, little finger lifting Govardhan Hill. Oh, you know, you expect me to believe that? Well, let's look at the other side of the pan balance. Let's look at the materialists. Everything came from nothing, that the universe is the original free lunch. One of my favorites is dark matter. Anyone do a Google search, it's bona fide, on dark matter. I'm not making it up. Dark matter is 80%, it may even be more, it's 80% of the matter in the universe, in creation. You just can't see it. And that's why we call it dark matter. Where it comes from is, you know, in order for the planets to stay where they are in their orbit, there has to be different gravitational pulls and forces. It's all balanced by gravity, which they don't know what gravity is, by the way. It's actually Lord Balaram Seshanag, but they have no idea what gravity is. They can define how it works, but what causes it? No way. They actually don't know, and they'll admit it. So they have gravitational forces. It's, you know, holding everything, you know, at a certain distance. If it wasn't there, it'd all implode on itself. But to have that gravitational forces holding the whole thing together, there has to be a certain amount of matter which they cannot find. They don't know where it is. But to make their equations work, their view of the universe, and they just accept as a given, it's a fudge factor. They just threw in 80% of the matter doesn't exist. Now suppose you were balancing your checkbook and it was off by 80%. And you just added a fudge factor. So, Let's take, suppose you gave me $100 and asked for change. We used to do this. Give me $100, ask for change, I'll give you 20 back. Say, hey, where's my other $80? No, they're just dark dollars. You just can't see them. They're there. Anyone in this room accept that? If that's the case, hey, I want to make some change with you. And yet, so on the practical scale, it's just unbelievable that everything came from nothing. If you walk into this room and everything's all jumbled up, say, what happened? Who's in charge? Where's the temple commander? You know, where is the wherever you see order, design, and symmetry in our experience, intelligence is behind it. That's just an axiomatic truth. And yet we're supposed to accept in the greatest of importance, the cause of all existence. Whoa. Put aside everything you've experienced. Put aside all logic. And accept that everything came from nothing. There's no intelligence behind it. And whatever's holding it together is dark matter. I mean, I could go on and I don't have time. You know, time worms? Dark stars? You know, what is it? There's holes in that. I mean, we could go. What they believe is just, it blows your mind. So it's not a question of fantastic, you know, we believe fantastic stories and they're standing on the hard ground of science. The fact of the matter is, we believe fantastic stories and they believe equally illogical fantastic stories. If there is an absolute truth, the source of all things, Ishvara Paramakrishna, Satchidananda Vigraha, if he has a transcendental form, shouldn't that form be amazing? Isn't it logical? I'll give you another example. Tears. You know tears in the eyes? Scientists cannot simulate them. The viscosity, the whole, they just can't figure it out. You can be sure right now there are hundreds of scientists working in research laboratories trying to figure out how to make tears. Because, you know, if you make it, you know, you can sell it for everyone who's wearing contact lenses. It's a huge field. They cannot duplicate it. I was told this by several doctors. Saliva. Saliva has amazing, it has the ability to just break down all kinds of stuff you put in your mouth. I mean, let's take a carmi for a moment. The carmi puts meat in his mouth and it digests it, breaks it down. And yet the soft gums and all the tissue, it doesn't dissolve. It's just another form of meat. Why does the saliva dissolve one type of meat and not dissolve another type of meat? And yet, although it's so powerful, it is antiseptic. It has all kinds of antiseptic properties. You're getting cuts in your mouth, so many different things, and they're all healing. It's very antiseptic. It has all kinds of, I mean, I could go on and on. Let's take another one, and I've forgotten the name, but if you find a botanist or a chemist, they'll know the name. It's not, it is a name for it, I've forgotten it. If you take a lemon tree, and you break it down to its atomic elements. What's in a lemon tree? Especially a fruit, a lime fruit, a lemon fruit. And you take everything that went into it, all the oxygen, all the soil, all the water, whatever's in the air. There are chemical compounds in the lemon fruit that are not of the elements that went into it. If I take a set of numbers, sorry for the algebra class, but if I take, it's simple. If I take a set of numbers and I take a subset out of that set of those numbers, that subset cannot contain anything that was not in the original set. You with me? Set of numbers. Don't worry, it doesn't get any harder. Here's a subset. Here's a set of numbers. Anything in the subset it created out of that master set cannot have any element that was not in the original set. Prabhupada says you take a drop of water and you analyze a drop of water. Anything in the drop of water from the ocean, take a drop from the ocean, has to be in the original ocean. It's a difference in quantity but not quality. So it's a mystery. They cannot explain how it happens. There are things in the lime fruit. Everything that went in, there's something, this additional thing that's in the fruit. Where did it come from? How did it happen? And they've broken it down to the simple elements. It's not that you can, you know, break it apart and put together a different compound. No. And they label it. And they say, oh, we understand how it operates. We label it. But why, they have no idea. Gravity, they have no idea. ask them, what is electricity? You'll go, I did this, UCSD, one of the top rated, right up there with MIT and Caltech. UCSD in San Diego, University of California, San Diego, one of the top hard science schools in the world, in the top 10. I met the head of their chemistry department. It's an Indian guy, actually quite nice. So I asked him, what is electricity? We went round and around like, you know, Alice through the rabbit hole. We went round and around, and I was following him. And it finally came back to electrically charged particles. Huh? He just described it. You know, that's not an answer. It's a bluff. It's circular logic. And it's the same thing with gravity. When you actually get, we could go on and on and on. So we believe fantastic stories. They believe fantastic stories. Our fantastic stories have a logical thread. Theirs have no logical. If you come down to everything came from nothing, that the universe is original free lunch from a singularity, everything exploded with no design, it's converse to every logical thing we experience. You follow Vedic logic, it makes complete sense. So we need to accept the incredible arrogance. Here's one of my favorites. They're trying to find life on other planets. They say there's no life on, they think that there's maybe so many light years away in another galaxy, they found something that they think may be similar to the Earth, therefore there will be life there. All the other planets are barren. But it presupposes, it rests on the premise that life has to be like our body, based on ours are Earth bodies or based on carbon or whatever it is. But why do bodies and other life forms have to be based on carbon? Why can't they be based on another element? Why can't they be gaseous? Why can't they be subtle? Why can't they be? And we know Earth, fire, water, air, ether, mind, intelligence, these are all different forms. So they say unless there's a body based on carbon like ours on the Earth, there can be no other bodies in the entire universe. It's incredible arrogance. If I can't see it, if I can't measure it, if I can't cut it down into little tiny pieces that I can perceive, it doesn't exist. Well, I'm sorry, my friend, excuse my French, who the hell are you? It's a fact. We can't even find our car keys half the time. We can't find the way to the Walmart without a GPS. I was in a class one time. It was actually quite fun. We were making this point, and the professor was saying everything can be understood by the senses. And he wanted to find a quote in one of his books. He said, let me just find my glasses. You know where his glasses were? On top of his head. Even the students started to laugh. You know, the man can't even find his own glasses on his head. So the fact of the matter is that we live in an amazing universe. That's a fact. It is a mind-blowing, amazing universe. And the more you look at it, you talk to these astrophysicists, the more you look at it, the more bizarre, far out, amazing it gets. So just back to this. If you sprout a seed, take a seed. Kids, try this at home. Take a seed. Is this being recorded? Oh, Hare Krishna. I'll be careful what I say. If you take a seed and you sprout it, as that plant grows, what happens to the original seed? It dissolves into nutrition for the actual plant, or it goes into you can't find it. Isn't it? What is the success of an oriental hand-woven rug? How do you measure its value? If they go up in price according to what? Thread or knots per inch, or what a thread count, same thing. And when you look at an oriental, I'll jump ahead. Well, maybe I'll make it a question. I'll go this way. When you look at an oriental rug, turn it over. What's on the back? There's a grid pattern, isn't it? And the Sanskrit is protam and otam. You know, a grid, you'll see the threads. Do we have any weavers in the house? No weavers? I guess we've moved on from our hippie days now. If I asked if there are any computer engineers, everybody raised their hand, you know. But anyway, no weavers. But you know what a loom looks like, right? And it's the warp and the woof. Have I got that right? Weft. Sounds like you have a lisp. Anyway, the warp and the weft. Okay. You all know, you got the picture in your head, right? When you weave the whole thing, the perfection of the rug is you have a beautiful pattern, whatever it may be, and you can't see the thread at all. I had this experience. My great uncle was in the CIA, believe it or not, in Persia, Iran. And he came back, one of his things as he fled from their nefarious deeds, is he brought back a bunch of antique rugs from Persia, from Iran. And I was a little kid playing at their house, left to my own devices. And I saw an oriental, they had this rug on the floor, and there was a little thread coming out. And I'm a kid. Lost about an inch. Hey, that was pretty cool. Lost about another 2 inches. My aunt, great aunt, came in and completely flipped. And if I'd kept going, what would we have had? A pile of yarn and a bunch of white thread. The perfection of the rug is that you don't even see the thread. So Krishna's described as the protom and otom of this universe. What is it? Mattasmitigyanam? No, what am I thinking about? Mattaparataram nanyat kinchidasti dananjaya. That everything rests on Krishna. That word otom is actually in the verse. But the perfection of Krishna's mastery is we can't even see it. Prabhupada said, you think you're sitting on the floor. I'm sitting in the hand of Krishna. So for a devotee, he sees Krishna everywhere. Krishna's inside Prahlad Maharaj. He knew Krishna's inside every atom. His father asked, is Krishna in this pillar? Prahlad said, definitely. He's there inside every atom. He's definitely there. No doubt about it. So I guess because of the time factor, we'll move this way. There are different ways of perceiving. They say seeing is believing. I mean, I can show you a whole bunch of optical illusions. Seeing is not believing. Go to a magic show. And after, tell me seeing is believing. The whole thing is don't listen to their words, watch their hands. Seeing is not believing. And there's other means of perception. If you want to purchase a mango for the deities, for beautiful Rukmini Dwarkadish, if you want to buy a mango, how do you find the best mango? Do you do it by seeing? Seeing may help you initially. Okay, it's not green, it's yellow. How do you tell if a mango is first class? Smell it. Who said smell? 10 points of that man. So you smell it. Then you know, oh, it's a nice, soft, your touch is also there. We'll get to that in a second. But seeing is not believing. Smelling is believing. This is Prabhupada's example. Let's make it California, the avocado capital of the world. How do you know if an avocado is ripe? You touch it. Seeing is not going to help you. They all look the same. You see if it's soft. So in many ways, our process of education or of learning about the world we live in is not simply seeing. According to the circumstances, we use all kinds of senses. If we want to understand that which is beyond our material experience, I'm going to give you a huge hint. If you're sleeping at night and a burglar comes into your house, you don't see them, you don't smell them, you don't taste them, you don't touch them. If you're sound asleep, what will wake you up? If they trip over something, bang their last, sweet Jesus, what was that? Hey, wait, who's in the house? As Prabhupada says, the man says, oh, I'm not stealing. Then why are you in the house at 12 o'clock at night? So, hearing. And medically they say, when people go into a coma, quite often the remaining sense is hearing. There was a guy, I think I've mentioned before, he was a friend of Brahmananda's father. The man went into a coma. Everyone thought he was dead. The parents, the wife, started flirting with a doctor. She's got to pick up another guy. This guy's gone. She was like, jumping, getting ready to jump the bridge. The kids were all arguing because the man was wealthy. Hey, pull the plug, you know. They were all like this, you know. They didn't know that he could hear. And he made a miraculous recovery, came out of the coma, divorced the wife, disinherited the kids, and married his nurse. I mean, that's not that I don't recommend that as a, you know, process, but they say that even in a coma, quite often, the senses are there. I mean, I don't have time. I remind me some other time to tell you the story about Mr. Prakash and his encounter with the Yamadutas. I mean, the guy was a dry South Indian Brahmin who only came to the temple because his wife dragged him there. And he is now, he has had these fear of the Lord put in that man. He saw the Yamadutas 3 times in a coma. Well, because I've started, I'll just finish. When he came out of this coma, I mean, I went to see him. He was in a coma for about 3 weeks. He had that greenish-blue pallor. You know, I mean, the guy looked, I mean, I was trying to encourage the wife, but I was thinking, this guy is, you know, gone. You know, so we chanted for him and, you know, whatever. But there's no way this guy's coming back. Sure, what I know. 2 weeks later, I get a call. Budri, you got to come to the hospital. It's Mrs. Prakash. You got to, he's come out of the coma, but he won't speak to anybody but you. So I thought, well, okay, maybe he's going to put the temple in the will, you know. I zipped right down there. No, I was, you know, whatever. I don't want to take up too much time. So I zipped down there. And he said, he looked at me. And the relatives were there. The doctor was there. They looked at me and they said, Budri, said, they came. 3 times they came. So the doctor said, yes, we almost lost him 3 times. He flatlined 3 times. We thought we'd lost him. He said, no, they came. The dimwit relative said, oh, yeah, we came, but we couldn't find him. They'd moved him from this room, that room. He said, no. He said, they came. So being a, you know, trying to be a devotee, I have a little idea. So I said, you mean the Vishnu Dutas? He said, no. He said, the bad people. So I said, oh, you mean the Yamadutas? He said, yes, yeah. And the man was extremely animated by this point, you know. He said that they came to him and they said, we're coming for you. He said, you can't take me. I am a servant of Radha Giridhari. And they left. Then they came back again. They said, you know, and he's not really a servant. He was sort of like just, you know, in everybody, they said there's no atheist in a foxhole. You know, in that situation, they came again. Again, he said the same thing. The third time he said, and this guy is a scientist, you know, he works for UCSD, you know, he's like a, you know, he's not inclined to mystical thinking. Third time he says they came to him, the Yamadutas, and he said, he was a little frustrated. He said, take me or leave me. It all depends on Radha Giridhari. Those are the names of the deities in San Diego. It all depends on Radha Giridhari. He said, at that point, the Vishnu Dutas came and said, do not touch him. And he came out of his coma. Pretty far out, huh? And I tell you, that guy is like, he sweeps the temple patio. He like serves out prashanam, whatever you want him to do. He's just like, Mr. Prakash, he's on it. He's there. You know? He's literally had the fear of God put into him. And there's so many stories like that. So the point I want to make, you know, hearing, perception, if we want to know Chaitanya, I'll still try it. Maybe you weren't listening. It's getting close to prashanam time. Everyone's mind is slowly drifting to other things. If we want to know Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Srila Prabhupada says, what book? There's so many books, Chaitanya Mangala, so, and with all respect, no doubt, Chaitanya Bhagavat. But if we want to truly understand the deepest level, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what book do we read? Chaitanya Charitamrita. Shikshastuke, it's in there. It's in the in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Now, who wrote Chaitanya Charitamrita? Krishnadas Kaviraj. Did Krishnadas Kaviraj meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally? No. Well, where did he get all of his information? Raghunath Das Goswami. He simply heard from his spiritual master and wrote. And all the imports of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became revealed in his heart. He was a grand disciple of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, I'm not going Ritvik on you, don't worry. If you want to see an object, and we just saw it this morning, and your eyes are faulty, what comes to your aid? You get the wrong answer, you still get breakfast, don't worry. Yes, Archita Prabhu. Glasses, isn't it? Now, you could say, don't they make it a second step? There's your eyes, there's the glasses, and then there's the object. Do those glasses impede your perception, experience, understanding of the object? Wow, come on, man, they're in between your eyes. They're blocking the vision. I want direct experience. The glasses enhance the experience. They bring it into focus. Without the glasses, you cannot truly see. So we need to take initiation from a physically present spiritual master, a guru, Diksha Guru, and even more importantly, Siksha Guru. We need them to say, no, not that, this. Don't do that, do this. No, it means this. You're halfway there, but here's the rest of the understanding. They bring the ultimate object into focus. So we have had, in the minds of some devotees, you know, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that progress is a gradual series of adjustments towards perfection. It's a fantastic sutra. I'm going to say it again. Progress is a gradual series of adjustments towards perfection. You may not get it right the first time. You may not get it. You may be right, but it may not be complete. And in a series of steps, as you evolve, you get the full picture. A gradual series of steps towards perfection. When Srila Prabhupada left this world, I can tell, and it's confirmed in the Bhagavatam, there's that whole section after the Paranjana story, how the queen, what is her name? Archie? What is the queen's name? Gandharvi. Vidarbi, is left alone. And there's that whole section how she's lamenting for her husband. And Prabhupada gives these profound purports, making the analogy just like the disciple when the spiritual master leaves. And he completely bewildered. Of course, the saving grace is you take hold of the or instructions of the spiritual master. We, when Prabhupada left, were devastated. And that which, frankly, has torn apart spiritual societies around the world, even our own Gaudiya Math, was completely torn apart, so that we had some difficulty understanding how it all fits together. Srila Prabhupada is the founder of Chard, the preeminent Siksha Guru, and our Diksha Guru. There was a time there that the Diksha Guru was everything, and everybody else was chopped cabbage. We lived through those days. Then, you know, the Diksha Guru falls down. All of a sudden, we pull the curtain back and there's Prabhupada again. Then you get reinitiated. We push it on. No, forget Prabhupada. Now it's the Diksha. How does it all fit together? It's not an easy thing to perceive. Who delivers the disciple? My guru. My Diksha Guru. Well, that's an element of your delivery. If you want to make a very strong rope, how do you make a very strong rope? Who said that? Hey, 10 points. Many strands. You make a core. You bind it together. It becomes very strong. We're delivered by the holy name. We're delivered by our Diksha Guru. We're delivered by the Shiksha Guru. We're delivered by Shastra. We're delivered. It goes on and on. We're even delivered by Prasadam. All those things combine together. Ultimately, we're delivered by Krishna within the heart as Chaita Guru. But it's not one, it is all. Prabhupada said, it's another one of those profound things. Prabhupada says in Nectar of Devotion, intelligence is the ability to balance opposing points within the mind. I'm going to say it again, it's a fantastic sutra. Intelligence is the ability, one of the elements of intelligence, is the ability to balance opposing points within the mind. How can Krishna, be inside everything, outside everything? And yet he has a form. How is he in everyone's heart? How is he also simultaneously playing in Gurukul, you know, in Goloka? Prabhupada says in the spiritual world, it can be daytime and nighttime simultaneously. Wrap your mind around that. Look at the cover of the Bhagavatam. You can be sporting in Vrindavan and be participating in the Sankirtan movement with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Buy one, get one free. I mean, you get the whole package, you know. I mean, wrap your mind around that. There was a guy telling me last night, you know, I have a lot of questions that aren't answered about the spiritual world. There's a tape, Prabhupada's on a morning walk. The devotee's asking, Prabhupada, is there fog like this in the spiritual world? Prabhupada gives him answer. Prabhupada, is it in the spiritual world? And Prabhupada gives him. Third time they ask, Prabhupada said, just go there and find out. You know, we have so... I don't understand. Oh, that's the measure? Again, you can't even find your car keys or your way to Walmart without GPS. Oh, I don't understand. Why is that? Again, it's the arrogance. Why is that the measure? You don't understand how you're digesting your food. You don't understand how your hair is growing. And you're going to stand in front of me, well, I don't understand, that's the measure of all things. Well, you're an idiot. I mean, Hare Krishna. I'm an idiot. Let's lay it on me. I'm an idiot. I can't understand so many. Why is that the measure? But if we go to Shastra, everything is explained. And if it's not explained in Shastra, it's the detail that doesn't matter. Just go there and find out. So I want to read something. I guess we've come to that point. Oh, I want to tell another blissful story. It's not my story, so I can certify it as blissful. Ganapati Maharaj told me this. And anyone who knows Ganapati Maharaj, he is anything but a sentimentalist. Mike, would you agree? He's not a sentimentalist. He's not going to be, you know, blown over by the warm and fuzzy. That's just not where this man is at. He distributes books at the Grand Canyon sometimes. Because in the summertime vacation, it's a good spot. And you can picture the Grand Canyon, because there's all kinds of people go to the Grand Canyon. But there's a large percent of them that are your archetype American tourist. You know, shorts, camera, 30 pounds overweight. You know, you can just picture the hat on his head. You know, what you can just picture. If you were to go to Central Casting for a middle-aged American tourist, bing, you got this guy, right? Ganapati Maharaj is standing behind the table. This man just walks by, looks, does a double take, comes all the way back, grabs his wife and says, that's him, that's him, that's the man, pointing to Prabhupada's picture. Turns out that Prabhupada, this man, he couldn't sleep. He said, I keep having this dream. This man comes to me and says, buy my books. So I could never find the books. I went on Amazon. I couldn't find the picture of the man. I didn't know the name of the books. I didn't know the name of the man. He was coming to me saying, buy my books. The man bought a full set of books. He was so excited. He thought, now I can get some sleep. At least he bought the books, you know. I mean, there's all kinds of stories. I mean, I don't have time to remind me some other time to say about the shoes, Prabhupada's shoes, stolen from Prabhupada's palace. I mean, there's so many far out things. So Prabhupada, okay, I'm going to read it. I'll just read this. Did I bring it? I hope I did. Hey, what's up? Achcha. This is a GBC resolution. So all bow in honor of that. It is number 303, and I'm going to read it. Whereas there is a need to clarify within our society via succinct statement, Srila Prabhupada's preeminent position in relationship to Diksha and Shiksha Gurus, as well as all ISKCON members, and to provide clarity on the function and position of Diksha and Shiksha Gurus in ISKCON, resolved. You know, it has to be put in this language because it's a formal resolution. The GBC endorses the following statement. As the founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, ISKCON, and the preeminent teacher and ultimate authority within our society, Srila Prabhupada has a unique relationship with every ISKCON devotee. Srila Prabhupada has a unique relationship with every ISKCON devotee. Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the original Guru who whose divine grace descends through the medium of the Guru Parampara. As such, a devotee is ultimately delivered by Sri Krishna, acting through a combination of various manifestations of his mercy. This includes, but is not limited to, the Chaita Guru, Srila Prabhupada, Guru Parampara, one's Diksha Guru, and other Shiksha Gurus, the holy name, Shastra, and the nine processes of devotional service. Picture that rope, all these elements bound together. Within these cooperative elements, Srila Prabhupada, as the founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, is the preeminent guru for all members of ISKCON. All members of ISKCON, for all generations, are encouraged to seek shelter of Srila Prabhupada. All members of ISKCON are entitled and encouraged to have a personal relationship with Srila Prabhupada through his books, teaching, service, and his ISKCON society. All members accepting leadership roles within ISKCON, including Diksha Gurus and Siksha Gurus, have the duty of serving together under ISKCON's Governing Body Commission, the GBC, to fulfill Srila Prabhupada's instructions, as he has given in his books, lectures, and personal communications. Overall, the primary duty of all Diksha and Shiksha Gurus and all other leaders and others in all leadership positions is to assist Srila Prabhupada in his service to his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and our Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. It's only one page more. Those who accept the service of Diksha or Shiksha Gurus in ISKCON are required to be exemplary in representing Srila Prabhupada's teachings in their words and personal behavior. The Siksha Guru gives spiritual instruction and inspiration on behalf of Srila Prabhupada and our Guru Parampara. The Diksha Guru gives spiritual instructions, inspiration, formal initiation, a spiritual name, and later imparts the sacred Gayatri Mantra to a qualified disciple as service to Srila Prabhupada and our Guru Parampara. I can have 100 extension cords here, and the current will flow. But if I disconnect and put that cord right next to one of those cords, right next to the other, what happens? Hey, they're touching. Well, what? No. It has to be completely connected. So the mercy coming from Krishna, flowing down through the Guru Parampara, to the degree, Prabhupada said it so many times, my qualification, Prabhupada said, I only have one qualification. Was it that he was a fantastic cook? I know how to make luglus. I do. I learned from Govardhan, who learned from Kirtananda, who learned from Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, this is Mother Yasoda's recipe. So how does it flow down? How is everything flowing down? Everything is coming through Guru Parampara, and to the degree that one is fully connected, to that degree the current will flow. So the measure, Prabhupada said, my only qualification was that he was a fantastic cook, which he was, that he was a... Even you listen to Prabhupada's lectures, just materially, Prabhupada's ability to deliver a lecture and capture an audience and make a point, I mean, he's fantastic. So was it because he was a fantastic lecturer? Why? What did Prabhupada say certify as his one qualification? That's good, but that's not what he said. He said, I am simply a servant of my Guru Maharaj. Whatever my Guru Maharaj told me to do, I follow blindly. He told me, if you ever get books, ever get money, distribute books, print and distribute. Therefore, he said, I am following blindly. Whatever I've got, he said, I'm beating on them. Increase, increase, 50%, now increase. 20%, now increase. Double it. He said, everything, even we're going to make later on some other time, I'm going to be back in a few days, we're going to make a special presentation just on the Mayapur Temple and the epistemological history of the Mayapur Temple, how it is a space portal opening up the path to the spiritual world. It's a pretty flat statement I just made. Your Star Trekkies out there, don't worry. But there's profound Shastric reference, and Rabindra Sarup has pulled this all together. It'll literally blow your mind. You'll want to go to Mayapur immediately. Prabhupada said you could be liberated. You can live on the air in Mayapur. So everything the Acharyas wanted done, Prabhupada, like check, 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 knocked off the list. And because, and his qualification, Prabhupada said, was that I'm a servant of my spiritual master. As he ordered, I am trying to fulfill. Therefore, a guru in ISKCON independently has no potency. Siksha, Diksha Guru. His potency, which can be profound, is to the degree that he's connected to his Guru Maharaj. So I'll just finish this and then we'll be done. Srila Prabhupada has clearly explained that devotees who are strictly following the Krishna conscious principles are acting on the liberated platform, and as such are pure devotees, even though they may not actually not yet be liberated. Such unalloyed devotional service is not necessarily determined by one's role or position of service, but by one's realization. Those who are accepting the service of Diksha and Siksha Guru within ISKCON are mandated to be strict followers of the instructions of Srila Prabhupada, and as such, as long as they follow, they are acting on the liberated platform. Thus they may serve, as Srila Prabhupada ordered, as bona fide representatives of the Lord and the Guru Parampara, and via media of their mercy. Yet it should be clearly understood that if such Diksha or Siksha Gurus deviate from strictly following, they may fall down from their position. So they're not necessarily liberated, you know, hearing the flutes of Vrindavan. But if they act on the platform of service to Srila Prabhupada, strictly following, they can deliver you. Prabhupada saw kids don't try this at home because I know it's on video. There was a truck going up a hill, and one kid was holding onto the back. There was a rope from the back of the truck, and a kid was holding onto the back of the truck via the rope. And another kid was holding the back of his bicycle, another was holding the back of his bicycle, and there were four or five kids flying up this hill at the speed of the truck. So Prabhupada said, he stopped this with the camera. Thank you. Prabhupada said, in the same way, Prabhupada said, I am holding on to the feet of my Guru Maharaj, and you hold on to my feet. There's that lecture. Prabhupada said, I am 35th or 34th, you're 35th, you're 36th, and he's explaining the disciplic succession. As to the degree that we hold tight under the lotus feet of our spiritual masters, Siksha and Diksha, then we have that ability. As soon as we let go, we're not. It doesn't mean that we're liberated. So don't think that necessarily anything that comes out of the mouth of my Guru Maharaj, he's a liberated soul. To the degree that it lines up with Srila Prabhupada and Shastra, then definitely. Okay. Thus, to act as a Diksha Guru in ISKCON means to serve under the GBC and in cooperation with other ISKCON authorities by functioning as a regular guru as Srila Prabhupada has directed. Prabhupada was asked, this is history, don't get bewildered, like the magician with the hands. You'll hear so many different things. Srila Prabhupada called the GBC to Vrindavan. Historical fact, no doubt, check the box. Prabhupada said, I am leaving. Are there any questions I have not answered? Then he told them, he said, you go back, you discuss, and come back and ask me, are there any questions that I haven't clarified, and you ask me. History, check the box, no one denies it. They went, they met, I don't know whether it was the same day or the next day, they came back, and they asked Prabhupada, how will the Bhagavatam be finished? Prabhupada said, Pradyumna can take it up, others can take it up, and they can finish the Bhagavatam. How will the GBC go on? Prabhupada said, as long as they're performing properly, acting properly, they're GBC for life. If someone falls away, if someone leaves their body, what if, when, whatever, the GBC itself will select a replacement GBC. Prabhupada said it. Then they asked Prabhupada, how will initiations go on when you're no longer physically present? And Prabhupada said, disciple of my disciple, grand disciple, regular guru. It's there. Disciple of my disciple, regular guru, grand disciple. When anybody goes off into this, you know, whatever their permeation, hybrid version is, you ask them, please explain for me. Prabhupada said, because it's there, it's undeniable. Regular guru, disciple of my disciple, grand disciple. And I swear to you, Prabhupada said, you know how a little dog beats a big dog in a fight? I mean, everything's there. I mean, Prabhupada covered it all. You know, so in case it was ever a question, how does a little dog beat a big dog in a fight? He grabs one spot finds one weak, sensitive spot and grabs on and just does not let go. So Prabhupada said in the same way, when you're in a philosophical discussion, you find a weak point and you just keep hammering. You watch Prabhupada with that cardinal, what was his name? The guy who died? Danilu, in Paris, who was found dead of a heart attack on the steps of a house of ill repute. And you can be sure he didn't die there. He died inside and they dragged him out on the steps to try to save his honor. You know what happened. And there's that discussion where Prabhupada's talking about, you know, ahimsa, nonviolence. How can you kill the animals? Bible says thou shalt not kill. It doesn't say murder, it says thou shalt not kill. And the guy weaves and bobs and and you watch Prabhupada. It's very interesting. You watch, you can see Prabhupada's, and Prabhupada's leg starts to bounce. This man is the leader of hundreds of thousands of people, and he's a rascal. And you see Prabhupada, he's just about to let the guy have it, you know? And then the man says, well, what about higher principles? Prabhupada says, where is the question of higher principles when you don't understand lower principles? And Prabhupada just hammered and hammered the guy. You see it again and again. So if you get into one of these discussions, just hit him with this. Because Prabhupada, it's undeniable. Regular guru, disciple of my disciple, grand disciple. Okay? I'll finish this. This statement, while conclusive, is not exhaustive in its discussion of these principles. The GBC may authorize additional statements and papers future explain the preeminent position of our founder, Acharya Srila Prabhupada, that book that's coming out. The role and responsibilities of those who serve in the Guru Society. We have a paper. It's called Lines of Authority. And it explains how does a Diksha Guru, how does a Siksha Guru, how do they fit with the temple president in the GBC? How does our authority structure actually work? You need to know that. It's important information. Okay, I'll finish. The role and responsibility of those who serve as gurus in society and the related duties of ISKCON members and initiates. All GBC members must distribute this resolution to all ISKCON temples, communities, and congregations via the appropriate means of communication for the education of all ISKCON members. This statement shall also be studied in ISKCON courses, including introductory courses, ISKCON disciple courses, the spiritual leadership seminar, etc. Being a guru in ISKCON and those other relevant venues. Reading this statement and affirming that it has been read prior to initiation shall be part of the test for all prospective initiates. So for more details, you can read this Harmonizing ISKCON's Lines of Authority, and it gives references in here. But that's the basic position, that you all have a direct relationship with Srila Prabhupada via media of a bona fide regular guru, and that regular guru, shiksha or diksha, is dependent on the degree that they're surrendered to Srila Prabhupada and the parampara. Any questions? Yes, Mataji. I'm not afraid to die? I have no idea what was happening. I don't know. I saw a devotee leave his body, and as he left his body, and he'd been in Maya. He'd been out, he had AIDS, I mean, he had just been through the ringer, and when he realized he was at the end of his life, came back and became a very serious devotee. And when he left his body, he put his hands up and said, Prabhupada, you came. So, Mataji, because of the time factor, I have no idea what he was thinking. And if he wasn't, maybe he was, if he's not afraid, I don't want to speculate. And whatever he said beforehand, we don't know what he said afterwards. Voltaire, we're done. Voltaire, a lifelong atheist, called for a priest at the time of death. So we don't know what people are thinking. I mean, do you have a specific question in there? Or is there any, I don't want to cut you off. You won't see them because you're a devotee. Prabhupada said you're guaranteed. I'll give you another example. Gopalasyapriya. You know Gopalasyapriya? Nice devotee, Prabhupada disciple in Vrindavan. She's married to Damodar. I hope I've got that right. Otherwise, if it's being taped, I'm sorry. So, she was working as a nurse at St. Joseph Hospital, Ann Arbor, Michigan. We were delivered. What is the Bhagavatam that has the Yamadutas on the back cover? I forget what, but it was broken up into different. It was a sixth canto, but I forget. Anyway, that's all we had in the book room, you know. And it was a little tough, especially for, you know, people who weren't expert to distribute that book. Because you get in the front, they look and they say, whoa, there's the Yamadutas, you know. Anyway, it's what we had, and we're distributing it, you know. And I handed this young girl that Bhagavatam. She turned it over, and I expected the usual reaction. And she went white as a sheet, and she said, what does this mean? Different reaction. I said, well, I began, she said, to make a long story short, she worked in St. Joseph's Hospital in the critical, what do they call it? Critical care? No, when you're about to die, they've got a euphemism on it. Huh? Anyway, it's not hospital. Now they call it, but anyway, that's the word that she worked in, where they just warehouse you till you die. There's nothing they can do. You know, before the hospital, this is before the hospice movement. So the point is, she said, all the nurses, they call it hearing voices. And they say that the patients will ring their bell, some of the patients, saying, you know, get them away from me, come in a cold sweat. Can't you see them? Can't you see them? And she said, they described dogs, chains, whips, horrible looking faces, teeth. We're coming for you. We're coming for you. And they used to think, well, it's a lack of oxygen to the brain, or it's some kind of reaction with the morphine or painkillers. They had all these explanations. But they could not, whatever the cause, they could not deny the phenomena. And they used to call it, they say, oh, number 12 is hearing the voices. Well, they'll be gone in 2 days. They knew that when someone was hearing the voices, they'd be gone in due course of time. It wouldn't be long. So some people, I don't know the answer, if everyone sees the Yamadutas, but I know a certain percentage sees them, and I don't recommend it. Just be a Vaishnava, take shelter of Krishna, and Krishna will protect you. No doubt about it. Okay, we should end there. Okay, one more question. But it should be a question on this, not the class, but what I read. It's better on that. Anyone who takes prasadam. We'll end after this question because we're ranging off the course of the topic. I thought if there was something agitating someone's mind on what I read, we could do that. That what you're saying, my Diksha Guru is not a liberated soul, what are you saying? You know, but no one apparently is disturbed by that, so we're going to move on. We are working on it, Prabhu. We have a committee working on it. It is not so easy. As soon as you did, you know, member, do they have legal rights? We like people, and people would like to feel a part of ISKCON. Do we ask them to pay a little dues, a little something? Do they get a membership card? We don't want to be off-putting. We don't want people to, you know, think, well, if you know, are you a member if you follow Krishna Consciousness Light, the two regular principles? I mean, what makes a member? It's not an easy answer, to tell you the truth. We have written a constitution, Sesh Prabhu. It's an excellent, it's a really a nice piece of work. The only thing unfinished is how do you define a member? All I can tell you is we're working on it because it's not an easy answer. Is it anyone? Let's end here. But Prabhupada came to Detroit, sat down, he'd just come from the airport, sat down on his Vyasasana, and he looked out over the audience. And you can picture just a packed house. Long-haired hippies, college professors, bikers, inner city street kids, black, yellow, red, white, the original Rainbow Nation, the whole spectrum of humankind. There was a sampling there in front of Prabhupada. Prabhupada looked out, he chuckled to himself, and then he said, you could hear it on the mic. Prabhupada said, Krishna's lotus feet, they're big enough for everyone. That everyone can find some shelter under the lotus feet of Krishna. So, you know, we're hesitant how to define a member, but we need to do it, but we're working on it. But sufficient, at least at this point, if you can find a little shelter under Krishna's lotus feet, then we'll consider you a member of ISKCON. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Hare Krishna. And if you want a copy of this or you have some questions, you can find me out later.